You ready to work?
Yes, sir.
You are about to embark on an intensive week of studies and leadership. We have some of the most outstanding facilitators in the world here with us today. And you are going to go through some changes. They are good changes. The secret to growth in life is knowledge and expansion. And we are very excited that you have come to the Global Leadership Summit, which is the premier leadership event that is taking place in this region for the past 27 years. I want to remind you that knowledge is the most important pursuit in life, because you cannot believe beyond your knowledge. And most of what I have learned are from two sources. One, from people. People are walking libraries. They are living deposits of curriculums. Talking to people, listening to people, are the greatest source of education. The second source of all that I know is from books. I want to read a quote from Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln said, "The things I want to know are in books. My best friend, if he is a best friend, is the man who gives me a good book." What a great thought. Charles Colton says this about knowledge and books. He said, next to acquiring good friends, the best acquisition is that of a good book. People think I'm smart. I simply have a good memory of things I read. Nothing new under the sun. Those who remember the most will be considered intelligent. So, the people around you in this room are your greatest assets. Talk to them. Let them teach you about their country, their unique perspectives of life. That's an education. A conference is not just a place for you to come and listen, but it's for you to network. Most of what you will learn in this experience the next 4 days will not be really from the sessions that are presented by our speakers and our facilitators, but it will be from those who you sit with, those who you talk to in the lobby, those who you exchange with in the hotel corridors, those who you listen to and ask questions to, because they are really your great source of education. And then all of our great presenters have great materials here that you can take advantage of. I always embrace the necessity of reading books in my life, because books are the things that really help me become all that I am. I study, I learn. I never knew the day would come when my own books would become sought after by so many millions of people. But it tells you, I guess, that what you know, people want to know. A real author is someone who is able to communicate what they know in such a simplistic, clear, progressively predictable form that people can embrace them. And so as we study together, one of the most important things you're going to appreciate, that no presenter can give you everything they know in this setting. None of us can do it. We will always know more than we tell you. That's why you pursue the books and the CDs, the DVDs. Because what I, like others, can put in a book, I can never speak from a podium. And so I want you to think about, as you go through this week, to please go and invest in yourself and make your two great acquisitions, people and books. Because a book is a person. And that's what I can say about that. I want to share with you in this session this subject, the top qualities of the 21st century global leader. Please write that down. And of course, in your workbooks, you will have to summarize what we're going to learn in this first session. We got many people still on their way trying to get to this island, but we are going to embark on this journey and they will join us down the track. I want to focus on the concept of the new global 21st century leader. And this is a very interesting subject at the moment because we are living in a world that is completely chaotic. All the foundations that we trusted in have been moved. One of our trustees in our executive vice president meetings 2 days ago said in the meeting, and you'll be hearing from him this week, he is a scientist, and he said that they discovered that the earth moved on its axis about 1 degree. Just 1 degree. So the earth is no longer the same earth that it was 10 years ago. It just moved 1 degree. That 1 degree is what's causing all the changes that you're feeling in the natural phenomenon. The weather is doing strange things. The climatic conditions are completely unpredictable. So not only is the world changing, but the earth changed. The world is referring to the systems that control what happens on the earth. The earth is the physical planet. My point is, if you're going to be a leader today, everything is against you. Even the earth, you got to try to remanage it now. Remanage means, we used to say that snow came in a certain part of the United States in November. However, I was there last week. It arrived in October. And the leaves were still on the trees. And because of that, the snow gathered on the leaves and the weight caused the tree to fall. The tree hit power lines and 1.3 million people were out of lights and they expect it won't be up completely until 30 days from now. And they said because we didn't expect snow in October because the leaves are not supposed to be on the trees in October. Now, how does that affect the new 21st century leader? If you are the mayor of that city, you didn't expect to have salt ready for the roads before November. You didn't expect that you would need to bring out all the machinery to try and repair power lines for people who are without lights, and they voted you into power. So the leader now has to manage nature. Anyone who wants to be a leader now must be crazy. And people run for leadership, but they don't think, what am I getting myself into? But one of the things I love about being brought up in a third world country is because we were born in crisis. So the folks who are in the industrial country, they say, we ain't got no lights. We never had lights. We use candles. So when I grew up, well, they said, the bridges ain't being fixed. We don't have no bridges. They said, things are so bad that the roads are not being repaired. You should see our roads. I guess what I'm saying is that the third world people are well equipped to handle the problems in the world because we are experts in crisis. And that's why I believe that the greatest answers to the future leadership of the world resides in this area we call the third world countries. They know how to manage chaos. They know how to deal with little. They know how to turn trauma into triumph. And so with that concept, we live in a world that is very, very unstable. I want to give you just a quick review of this, and I want you to think about some of these ideas. Technology is a major problem in our world today. I say problem because technology is normally seen as a solution, but it's also creating problems. And one of the challenges of technology is it makes things faster, and we can do things in some cases better, but it's also leaving a large chunk of the world behind. So technology is creating that gap between countries. Technology also gives us faster and better transportation. We can travel. That's an asset, but also a deficit in some ways. It's a challenge and a solution. It solves problems, create new problems. People are moving around faster, and therefore we got to learn to adjust to people who we're not used to being with, because people are moving in our life, in and out of our life in different areas. More information is not necessarily only an asset, but it can also be a problem. I think we are now suffering from knowledge overload. You go on the internet and Google a certain subject, and they give you 400 pages. All you wanted was a definition of a word. So there's an overload. International economic integration. No comment. Suffice it to say that what happens in any country will affect your country. Period. So anyone who wants to enter leadership must become instantly a global citizen. They must think globally. It's impossible to attempt to lead, whether you are a pastor, a politician, a priest, or a practitioner in any special profession. You have to think global, because the economies of the world are integrated. Whatever happens to you will affect someone. Many of us are thinking about Greece, and Greece is the big subject right now. But Greece will affect what takes place in your backyard. We are that integrated. I heard Mr. Obama say yesterday in his speech to the G meeting, he said, "We must not allow Greece to fail." I mean, here's a country that's so far away from America. He said, "No, they're too close. If they fail, this is like a domino." Well, I think the Caribbean know what that means. If Greece affects America, and most of our businesses from America is tourism, then Greece better not fail. So there is no way of isolating yourself in this environment. The third concept I want to remind you of in the global scheme of things is the maturation of markets in developed countries. Almost don't need to comment on that. All you gotta say the word is China, and that's enough. The emerging so-called third world markets, the power that they're carrying. I was in Peru, went there three times. It's incredible. We never heard of Peru in the Bahamas. The word was a foreign word just on the map. But when I went there, I realized that we need to relate to them as a country. They've got resources that America don't have. And the resources are much more accessible and also less expensive, of higher quality. There's a new market. And their economy is growing rather than declining. Brazil, we have an office in Brazil. Their economy is growing rather than declining. And so the markets have changed. We live in an amazing world of changes. And I want to say to those of you who are here who have services and products, consider not just one market. And then I think one of the most amazing things that happened in our century is the collapse of communism. I want to add to that the collapse of colonialism, which is still a recent experience. The Bahamas is only 39 years old from colonial oppression. So the effects of that is still present. And so many other nations in the world are products of oppression of a regime or an ideology like colonialism. And that has an amazing effect. I think those from South Africa today will tell you that their nation is only 16 years old and they are still in the heat of a major transition of oppressive ideologies. So that's the world we live in, and that's what you got to lead in. In the middle of all of this, you have to be a good manager, a good supervisor, an effective leader. And this means that you got to understand the context. Understanding the context means you must not think you are functioning in a vacuum. You are not isolated. So when we talk about leadership, you have to think in terms of what am I operating in? What's the environment? The only way out of chaos is leadership. Write that down. What did I say? Yeah, chaos never just goes away by itself. Someone has to lead you out of it. Whether it's financial chaos, organizational chaos, social chaos, political chaos, religious chaos, someone has to take responsibility. And that's why I want to remind you of a couple of things about the value of leadership. Number one, nothing happens without leadership. Number two, nothing can change without leadership. Number three, nothing develops without leadership. Number four, nothing on this planet improves without leadership. Someone has to take responsibility. And number five, nothing is corrected without leadership. If something is going wrong in your society, somebody got to step up and be willing to pay the price to correct that. And I think we can just think of all the historical issues that have been corrected. Someone even, to some case, had to die for that to be corrected. Martin Luther King Jr. comes to mind. Nelson Mandela. You had to pay a big price to correct something. So no one can expect things to be corrected by themselves. Leadership is necessary. And also, nothing happens without someone taking responsibility in leadership. The problem is, wherever we are, someone led us there. You don't wander in life. You actually follow in life. Sometimes it's conscious, and sometimes it's unconscious. Whatever the state of your company, your organization, or your country might be, there was a leadership issue that led you to that condition. And the only way to get out of that is you need leadership to take you out of it also. This is why this summit is so important. This summit is dealing with the most important issue on earth right now. And that is the leadership issue. The leaders of Europe don't know what to do. The leaders of the Caribbean don't know what to do with their conditions. In the United States, we know what's going on there, all of us. They're fighting to see who's going to try and fix stuff. Because leadership is that critical. You made a good decision to come here. Now let's talk then a little bit about leadership. Here's a statement I want you to remember. This is a Miles Monroe revelation. True leaders do not have a map. They carry a compass. What does that mean? Managers have maps. They can follow things that are laid out for them. Leaders have a compass. They're just trying to find true north. And then they got to go make a trail. So you've come into an environment where we want you to stop thinking just about following instructions. This week, we are going to create an environment for you to start thinking about discovering a dream, tapping into a vision. Let me tell you something about compasses. Compasses only tell you direction. They never tell you what's going to happen on your way there. That's why true leaders carry a compass. They always know where they're going. They know the destination. But they cannot tell you the cost, the challenges, the disappointments, the unpredictability of life to get there. So a true leader must always live with a measure of uncertainty. Sometimes a true leader, you may think, is a liar. But she's not lying. They may promise you something, and it may not happen the way they promised you. They didn't lie, they just didn't know. But they still know where they're going. So a true leader is a compass carrier. They know the destination, they know the direction, but they cannot detail the process. And that's why great leaders have a lot of inspiration but very little information. You got to trust a leader, because many times they cannot answer all of your questions. Now, therefore, let's talk about the attitudes global leaders must have to make it in the 21st century. First of all, you must recognize some things. Number one, opportunities and potential benefits inherent in diversity. Because there's so much uncertainty and diversity today, leaders must not wait for good times. They have to use the bad experiences and turn them into good themselves. A leader today must not be a leader who expects things to work out. You have to work them out. And this is why those lazy leaders who love to pray about everything are not going to make it. You got to look for the opportunities in what? Diversity and adversity. Secondly, you got to create your own markets. Let me tell you something about markets. Markets are created. They don't just happen. Bill Gates created a market. Steven Jobs, the late Steven Jobs, created a market with the iPad. He didn't wait for us to ask him for the iPad. He created the iPad and then made it a market. That's leadership. Don't wait for people to need you for you to show up. Make them need you by showing up. That's leadership. Thirdly, leaders must broaden their customer base. This goes for every area of leadership. Because, let me talk, for example, to some of you religious people. Your church is dying. Why? Because the market you used to serve are dying. So your programs are no longer valid to the new market. So you got to change your market. Study the market that has emerged and adjust your services to it. Higher levels of productivity. You have to focus on getting more out of less. Because the resources of the world are declining because of use. The population just hit 7 billion. They say in the next 5 years, it should be pretty close to 7.5. And then the next 20 years, it should be almost 10 billion. We're going to actually have exponential growth. Can the planet handle 10 billion people? What does that mean for you? You got to think that far ahead. One of the biggest things that the 21st century leader must focus on is creativity and new ideas. We're going to talk about that all week. So make sure you don't miss a session, because you're going to learn a lot about thinking creatively. In our next session, I'm sure that our speaker is going to mention a little bit about this. But as we emerge from the third world shadows and we begin to become the leaders of what happens on the planet, we're going to have to become complex thinkers. We're going to have to learn how to deal with new formulas of life and configure things a little differently than the patterns that were laid down. Matter of fact, let me put it this way. Everything you've learned the last 20 years is now useless. Because I'm trying to find a term to use. I want to say providence. Providence has wrecked every system we created in the last 20 years. The banking system, gone. Economic system, gone. Political system, gone. Matter of fact, even if you run for politics today and you won and became president, you still ain't safe. Have you noticed? Y'all better wake up. That means 2 years later, the citizens can go downtown and camp in the front of your office and put you out of office. Which means that political systems are no longer secure. The Greek prime minister decided he may step down. You know, sometimes it used to be safe when you won elections. But environments could change so fast that what you won on is gone. Can you lead when that which secured you is canceled? Can you still lead after that? Can you survive change that you did not predict? It's a strange world that we live in. Now, let me talk a little bit then about a reminder of some things. I call them the things that will destroy us in the 21st century. Number one, politics without principles. Number two, pleasure without conscience. What will destroy us? Wealth without work. What kind of attitude will destroy us? Knowledge without character. There's some educated fools in the world. PhDs, but they are stupid. The things that they do. You know, you get a guy who's a medical doctor and he's smoking. It's a mystery to me. What will destroy us? Business without morality. Everybody say, This is the biggest one right now in the world. This is the biggest one right now in the world. You know, this global economic crisis, they say, was caused by a few very cunning business people who activated something in the system, and now the whole thing has fallen apart. I understand that their activity was immoral. Giving loans to people they know can't pay it back, that's immoral. I was talking to a young lady in Aruba early in the year, and she is a banking supervisor in the loans department. She said that her bank is owned by an external company. And the company told them, we need you to increase the bottom line in the bank for loans. And that was the instruction that came down from the head office. Increase the accounts of loans on the books, or you will lose your job. So she said that they were under pressure. So when people came to take loans for a house or a car, they knew the person could not afford the loan. But because their job was under pressure from a power that was not even in their country, They had to give people loans who they knew couldn't pay it back to keep their own jobs. That's immoral. And so on the paper, it looks good. We got 300 loans, new loans for the year. And 90% will become bad loans in 3 years. And people end up with stress and commit suicide because of that. They can't pay their bills. So really, the system is killing people. No wonder why they're questioning the financial systems of today. That's the world we got to lead in. Another one, write this down. Science without humanity will destroy us. Some of the greatest blessings on earth is the advancement of science. And yet some of the greatest curses on earth is the advancement of science. They've advanced so well that you can actually kill a baby by taking a pill now instead of going to a doctor to get an abortion. Just take a pill. Science. They can actually, claim they can assist you in your Alzheimer's condition by taking the embryo of a fetus and using some of the cells to keep the 90-year-old man alive. This don't make no sense to me, but I'm trying to figure this out. You 90, you finish. Why are you going to use this unborn baby to keep you alive? You finish your life. Oh, I want to live to put more burdens on my grandkids. So you destroy somebody's grandchild to keep a 90-year-old man alive who's finished his life. Is this science? Is it inhumane to destroy a fetus to keep a man who's finished living alive? These are questions you got to deal with as a leader. It might be your father who begins to suffer from an ailment, and they will offer you the option in the office. We can fix your daddy, but we got to kill a baby. What are you going to say as a leader? Somebody may ask you for that advice and counsel. What are you going to say to them? I like this last one. What will destroy us? Worship without sacrifice. Let me break this down for you very quickly. If you want to be a leader today, you got to really deal with this issue. There are people who say they want to be holy, but they want to live unholy. No, let me put it another way. They want to do holy things, but live unholy. They want worship without sacrifice. Here's this guy who's a pastor, and he wants to lead the big church down the road, but he wants to shack up with someone who he ain't married to. So he's looking, he wants to worship, but he don't want the sacrifice of living right. You want to be a good businesswoman, a sharp businessman, but you don't mind cutting corners to make an extra profit. So you want to worship. You want to be right before God, but you still got some issues with sacrifice. You don't want to sacrifice, you know, losing a deal because it ain't fair. Are you willing to sacrifice? So leadership is... it's demanding a different level of thinking. Here's a phrase I thought was interesting by Stephen Covey. He said, effective leadership is putting first things first. And effective management is discipline carrying it out. Leaders know what to do. They set the priorities. The managers execute it. We need leaders today who can really know what to do. What do we do at this stage? And trained managers to carry it out. What can you do to prepare for global leadership environment? I'm going to give you some quick examples and some recommendations. Number one, learn a foreign language or two. I know some of you are afraid of this. But you need to learn to speak life beyond your narrow language. I myself, I travel a lot, so I have to learn different languages, different words all the time. I got to be able to communicate. And nothing is more insulting than speaking your own language to people who can't understand it. So leaders have to be very, very open to learning new languages. Number two, travel and live in many other countries. The global leader must become global, not just mentally. They must become global physically. Get out of your narrow culture. Sit at tables that eat things you don't like. Be with people who don't talk, dress, or smell like you. You will never be able to survive this century if you do not become a global traveler. That's why I'm proud of you. Some of you came to this place. You spent 24 hours traveling from Singapore. The people here from London, they flew 9 hours to come here. That's wonderful. They get to mix with you. This is the greatest education you can ever have. And then make friends while you're here. Give them your cards and exchange them. Why? Tell them, I'm coming to see you. I want to come to your country. I want to eat at your table. I want to walk down your streets and expand your life. I believe that one of the greatest tragedies on earth is the American concept of sports. How can you play the World Series by yourself? There are 198 countries in the world, and you ain't played none of them yet, and you won the World Series. The mentality is defective, because you're telling us that you are the world. And that's why when other countries challenge your system, challenge your taxation, challenge your export balance, you begin to feel very threatened. Why? Because you thought you was the world. Hey, we out here. I remember when America played the World Series the first time and she played Canada. Guess who won? Canada. America tried to play soccer. Got whooped. How can you say you're playing, you know, the world championship and you ain't playing the world? It's because it's very dangerous for you to think that your country is the world. I'm talking to everyone here. If you're going to lead in this 21st century, you must accept the reality that there is a world of nations and you're just a part of it. You're not in charge of them. We need each other. Number three, the global leader of the 21st century must work in foreign companies and countries in order for them to be adjusted to the climate of exchanging cultures. Ask your company to second you to another office in another country for a little while. Or volunteer yourself to go and spend a month or 2 months working in another environment. Why? Because you have to break out of your psychological narrow world. And the way you do it is you can actually do it by working in another country. Number four, the 21st century leader must take responsibility to work with and in your own country with foreigners. Now, this is a very major issue here. Because we are so narrow in our thinking, we believe the world only belongs to us in our country. And as soon as a foreigner comes into work in our country, and maybe even in our own company, we become very threatened. Well, the days of sovereignty are over. What did I say? Oh boy, that's a tough statement. Because we pride ourselves on being sovereign. Listen, that's only on paper now. We are building a project in the Bahamas right now, and you are part of the project in this room. The Chinese have signed a contract with a major company to build resorts right here where we are on this strip. To the tune of, I think, about $6 billion. Now, the project will demand so much labor that our country cannot supply the labor. We are only 350,000 people. The average age of our country is about 30, 25 years old. And we got to build a $6 billion project which requires specialty in every area, and they got to build it in a certain amount of time. We can't even supply the labor. So we got to bring in somebody. And the investor got to also protect their investment. Now, of course, you know, if I'm in the leadership, I can negotiate a good deal for my own people. That's a different issue. But we must learn to work with other people. Otherwise, we can't be a leader in the context of the global environment. And that includes your business, your church, your ministry, your department. Whatever you are involved in, you must get used to the idea that you will have what you call foreigners working among us. Yes, they are here and they ain't going away. So don't get the idea, you know, only for us. Them days don't work no more. The world is too small. I saw an article in the Economist this week. Interesting article. They're talking about the fact that America is down to number 31 on the educational system grading in the world. Down to 31. No longer number one. And what they're saying is that America is suffering from a sense of this foreigner immigrant psychological problem, where they're making very difficult for people to stay in America now. So what they're saying in the article, very interesting article, they said, look, if America was smart, she would study what she's doing. Do you know where the Asians are coming to get educated? To America. And then America makes sure they go back home. They don't want to stay. Interesting. So they go back home and they build their own economies and take American jobs through the factories moving to their country. So the article was saying maybe America should change her attitude toward immigration. If you train the guy to be a good IT guy, keep him. Wow. Hello. Hello. That's right. They say most of the Indians that were trained in technology were trained in America, and America said, go back home. Well, they go back home, and now they're running the place. If you can't find them, hire them. What kind of leadership do we have in our world? I heard a guy say once, if you want to know where your enemy is all the time, make him your assistant. Well, that's good advice. Jesus kept Judas with him. Why? I want to know where he is all the time. You know, when CNN first started by Mr. Turner, you know, it was a small little cable thing and it became a global concern. And suddenly what happened was people started subscribing to CNN and they stopped buying Time magazine. Because Time magazine, you know, was one of those magazines that used to be the kind of the international news magazine in the Western world. And so Time magazine realized, we're going to die if we keep this up. And CNN said, yep, that's true. And you're all of our competition. What did they do? They bought them out. So CNN now owns Time magazine. In other words, marry your competition. That ain't new. They did it all the time in Europe with them kings and queens. Instead of fighting, let's get the kids to marry. Then we can't fight no more because we're in-laws. Are you with me? Can you lead in that kind of environment where you stop thinking so narrow, so myopic that you think that everything got to be just you? Some churches need to actually dissolve and join your church. They got 2 members, you got 2,000. Come on, let's be honest. Something's wrong with this scenario. But your pride is so high, you think that, you know, you can preach to your cousin anyhow. Only 2 cousins in the church. Everybody say leadership. Leadership. Number 5, if you're going to make it in this world today as a leader, you got to read and study books and resources from other cultures. You have to learn to think interculturally. And I stress to you that no leader today is isolated. And I believe this is why the third world people are so better equipped, I think, to handle this kind of leadership, because they were historically displaced through slavery and other reasons. So they were uprooted, they were displaced, or they were invaded by another culture. So they had to adjust to intercultural experiences fairly quickly. So their capacity to move around is much more amicable to them because they have already been historically prepared for it. But we have to make it intentional now if we're going to make it as leaders. All right? Now, let me just say this about attitudes and attributes. The leader of the 21st century must also have some attributes that are very unique. One, they must have a belief in themselves. This is a tough one for third world nations, because when you've been a product of oppression and slavery, the first thing they take away from you is your self-concept, self-worth, and self-esteem. And therefore, self-hatred becomes the norm. And you have to have this corrected historically. And that's one of the biggest struggles, belief in yourself. And this is why, you know, most third world countries like foreign goods, because their idea is if it is local, it's no good. And they were brainwashed to believe that by the oppressive regimes. And so their belief in themselves become a problem. I can't believe that myself can produce a good shirt, so I buy a foreign shirt. So we got to start believing in ourselves. Number two, passion for your job. The leader today will not make it on popularity anymore. You only make it on passion. You have to believe so much in what you're doing that you're willing to die for it. Number three, you must have a love for people. And this is a missing link in leadership. I have never heard a politician in my life on any podium ever stood up and told the people, "I love you." Never have I heard it. I promise you programs, promise you jobs, I promise you water, promise you roads, promise you, but I don't like you. How come you can't tell me? Just tell me you love me, man. It's not expedient for a politician to be so emotional. No wonder why you got thrown out. I've met some pastors who don't like people. Why? Pastoring is a job. I'm a priest or a minister. I get paid to do this. I take my paycheck home. There's no love in the boardroom, just politics. Listen, this conference is built on a premise that the motivating factor for serving people is loving people. I think we got the greatest example of a lack of this in leadership from the communist collapse. Communism is an attempt to create love without love. Let me try it again. Communism is man's greatest attempt to create love without love. Communism says, share your food with your brother. We legislated. How can you legislate kindness? No more private farms. The farm belongs to the government. The government is going to take all the wheat and we can give everybody equal share. Listen, you're going to take my farm? And so there's this fight, antagonism that develops. Because what they're trying to do is legislate kindness. You can't make me share with people by law. If I give my body to be burned, but do not love the people I'm burning it for, I burned it in vain. Sounds familiar? We need leaders who love people again. The reason why you lead is because you love the followers so much, you don't want them to remain where they are. Let that return to the 21st century. An important attribute of leadership in this century is enjoying being alone. If you like to be liked, get out now. If you want everybody to agree with you, leave now. Leadership ain't for you. If you want everybody to be on your side, get out now. Leadership creates enemies, okay? Get over with. Get it over with. That's just the way it is. Because leadership is declaring independence from other people's opinions to pursue a purpose that you consider noble enough to sacrifice for. So you got to be able to be alone. Leadership is lonely. It's a lonely place. I always tell people, when you are out front, ain't nobody with you. If you're always in the crowd, you ain't leading. You're being carried by a current. You're not a leader. You are a victim. Sometimes you're the only one believe your dream. And that's all you get. I like what the first century apostle Paul said. He said, encourage yourself. I like that. Say that. Everybody say it. Encourage. Listen, don't wait for me to tell you you're nice. Look in the mirror and say, you bad thing, you. Look at that good-looking thing there. This is good. What I'm doing makes sense. Another attribute of the 21st century leader is you must be able to be satisfied with the success of other people. That means the leader of the 21st century cannot harbor one iota of jealousy. Jealousy is a sign that you don't believe in your own ability. You have no sense of your own significance in the world. This is very dangerous because you can never learn from people you compete with. You can never learn from people you are jealous of. You can never learn from people who you wish you were. You got to learn to live with other people's success and even enjoy it. Right. Commend them for it. Matter of fact, help them succeed so you can take some of the credit. That's leaders. Leaders are so secure in themselves, they're not threatened by other people's success. And those are the kind of leaders that are going to make it in the 21st century. And number six, you must have a commitment to the improvement of humanity. In other words, don't live to pay your bills. Live to pay your debt to humanity. We are really driven by this selfish spirit. Some people go into leadership because of the selfish spirit. They want to use the environment to better themselves. Not to better the people. These are corrupt people. They shouldn't even be with power. But a lot of those exist today. They actually go into the position to grab as much as they can for themselves. And that happens in all professions. We cannot make it in the 21st century with those attitudes. Now, as I close this segment, I want to give you five aspects of leading in the 21st century. The first one is creating. Don't wait for things to happen. Initiate action. The 21st century leader must be a creator. You create solutions. You create answers. You create responses to situations. Number two, got to be a builder. You don't just create solutions, you create cultures. You know, we've been building in this organization for 27, 28 years now, building a culture in this organization. A culture of a leadership philosophy that is very unique and in some cases very different from many philosophical perspectives. And it took a long time to build this. And many folks who come into our environment, they see and feel the difference. And we have to inculcate them. In other words, we are building a new culture of leadership. Thirdly, a leader must be a maintainer. When I say maintainer, they got to maintain that culture. If you have some convictions, those convictions, if they are noble and right and correct and spiritually sound, they should not change. They should maintain them. You know, there are some religious groups right now who are adjusting their convictions. You know them, right? Say, well, you know, 10 years ago we didn't believe in same-sex marriages, but since things have changed, you know, we'll have to adjust and become, you know, we've become more liberal and open, you know. So they're adjusting their foundations. They're not maintaining their convictions. You can't lead in this world with a vacillating foundation. Don't apologize for having a conviction. And don't let nobody turn your conviction into, they got some new terms they call it today. What they call it? What's the word they use? Politically correctness. You ever heard that term? What they're saying is, look, your convictions we don't accept. So you need to politically correct them. If you live that way, you'll never be a leader. How can I trust you if you change on me every weekend? Remember I told you, you can't lead by popularity no more. Your convictions will make you unpopular. So you got to maintain the culture that you created. Got to keep it. Leader must also be one who's constantly changing. Now, this may seem like a paradox. You never change your convictions, but you change your capacity to communicate them. Use these two words. Write this down. Adapt, but not adopt. What did I say? Adapt, but not adopt. You're supposed to adapt to every conditions and the environment, but never adopt the conditions, values, and morals. And that's why people are not leaders anymore. They have no standard that they're willing to die for. We need leaders who are clear in their convictions. They believe in it. You know, Nelson Mandela went to jail because of a conviction. And I know, I met him personally years ago. And I remember him saying in that environment we were in, he said, you know, they offered me over and over again opportunities to leave prison. They offered me house and car and everything paid for. They offered me, he says, everything you can dream of, they offered me. They will buy your convictions out. He told them, I'm staying in prison with my brothers. Today, he doesn't have to tell you he's a leader. Maintain your convictions. A developer. If you're going to be a leader of this century that's going to make it, you got to be able to reproduce leaders after your kind. Don't clone yourself. We don't want more of you. What we want is more like you. Be able to produce people better than yourself. In other words, leadership is not about you maintaining position and holding on to power. It is about you getting rid of your position and transferring power. Leadership is about you always moving. Matter of fact, succession is the only way with success in it. So if you are successful as a leader, it means that you are gone. That's how you measure your success. You are no longer there. Someone else has the position that you trained, you mentored. And we're going to continue this kind of grappling with leadership throughout this week. And some of you need to go back to college. This is college for you this week. Take a break from your normal course of work and invest in yourself like you're doing. This is a great decision you made to be here, and I want to thank you for coming this morning. Thank you very much.